This is number 0001, the Stuff File Podcast with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's radio that doesn't fly through the air. Coming from your computer and right into your ear, it's the Stuff File Podcast with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and this is indeed the inaugural edition of the Stuff File Podcast. And we have a lot coming your way in this one-hour program. We'll have a chat with Mitch Joel, president of Twist Image and the author of Six Pixels of Separation. He's also a podcaster and blogger himself, and he liked our old radio show.
You had an amazing show for 20 years, and then I say had, and I go, why had? You can continue having an amazing show. That's the power of these new media channels, and I'm happy you're diving in.
We'll meet Robert Barrows, the creator of the video-enhanced grave marker. What's playing at a cemetery near you?
One, I'm a sculptor, and I work in stone. And when you start carving a rectangular piece of stone, you can't help but thinking that you're carving your own tombstone. And I also run an ad agency, so I do television commercials all the time. And you put the two together, you've got a video tombstone.
We'll check the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
And we'll also have a visit with Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation.
Have you ever noticed when you go to the break room at work and just want to get a cup of coffee or something quick to eat, and there's the office slowpoke in front of you? It takes them 20 minutes to make a cup of coffee. I can't stand these people, can you? Hi, this is Steve Walsh. You know your guy in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Hey, we're back, and you're going to want to stick around for my two-minute tirade. It's coming up later on right here on the Stuff File Podcast with Peter Anthony Holder.
And, of course, there's stuff. Plenty of stuff. Because the show is called The Stuff File. And if you are trying to remember how to spell stuff, it's not spelled the standard way. It's S-T-U-P-H. That's what we call a stuff file. An eclectic mix of interviews, stories, and bizarre goings-on that we like to share. Something we used to do on the radio program, and now we do it here on the podcast. Now, as I said, this is the very first edition of the Stuff File Podcast. I'm hoping that there'll be plenty more to come. As you heard in the slate, it's actually 0001. I think it's pretty ambitious on my part to have a four-digit number, because I don't know if I'll get to 1,000 podcasts, but we'll see. We're going to try and do this podcast for you once a week. It'll be an hour-long program. Every once in a while, you might get an extra one. We'll see how it goes, and we'll see how people accept this. I'd also like to, right off the bat, thank all the folks who sent me emails and letters and notes in Facebook talking about what happened to me at the radio station and the fact that we're no longer doing that radio show after a 20-year run. It was a good run while it lasted. And all your heartfelt wishes meant a lot to me, so that's why I decided to try and at least keep the stuff file going in some way, shape, or form. Don't know how it'll work out, but we'll give it a try. And as I said, this is the inaugural program, so it's a work in progress. Shall we get to the stuff file? Yes, let's do that right now. We start off with a story from Uniontown, Pennsylvania. A Pennsylvania history buff who recreates firearms from old wars accidentally fired a 2-pound cannonball through the wall of his neighbor's home. William Mazur, who was 54, fired a cannonball outside his house in Georges Township that ricocheted and hit a house 400 yards away. The cannonball, about 2 inches in diameter, smashed through a window and a wall before landing in a closet. Authorities said nobody was hurt. State police charged Mazur with reckless endangerment, criminal mischief, and disorderly conduct. Is it really criminal mischief? I don't know. Anyway, he said that he was recreating 19th century cannons because it was a long-time hobby. You always hear that term, somebody says, you know, you should get a hobby. Maybe this guy shouldn't. I don't know. He said he is sorry that he will now stop shooting them from his property, which is about 35 miles southeast of Pittsburgh. So once again, Pittsburgh is safe. Meanwhile, since we're on the web now and flying through the air and in all kinds of new media with this, we'll have a lot of stories that deal with Twitter and Facebook and the like. And this story, well, it was bound to happen, sadly to say. Someone has been murdered because of Facebook. 31-year-old Brian Lewis stands accused of murdering his wife, 26-year-old Haley Jones, after he found out that she changed her Facebook relationship status from married to single. You know, it's kind of a good idea that if you're going to change your status in that way, shape, or form, that you kind of tell the person first before they find out online with everybody else, because it could have dire consequences. Prosecutors say Lewis stabbed her to death with a kitchen knife in their home in Phillipston, South Wales, 10 days after she made the status change in Facebook. The couple's four children found the body, and Lewis surrendered to police later. He reportedly told friends he could not stand to lose Haley to another man before the killing happened. So, there you go. Well, here's a story that deals with swine flu, among other things. This is just weird, or maybe not. The Center for Disease Control headquarters in Atlanta is now offering a most unusual toy in its gift shop, a stuffed and fuzzy version of the H1N1 virus microbe. A company called Giant Microbes sells a swine flu plush toy along with other interesting fuzzy models of bed bugs, mad cow disease, and even STDs like syphilis and gonorrhea. I'd like to cuddle up with those. According to their website, the company views the toys as learning tools. Each microbe toy is accompanied by information about the disease that it represents. Now, I started off by saying that this is a kind of a weird story, but in hindsight, I don't know, maybe not. I like ties. I collect all kinds of ties. I like ties with funky patterns on them and funny, humorous things that they say and all kinds of ties. And I've even got a tie rack in my closet that is a revolving tie rack with a light on it, sort of like the way your clothes revolves when you go to the dry cleaner. I have that. Yes, I know, it's kind of sad, but that's who I am. Anyway, one of the ties I have is an Infectious Wearables tie. That's the company called Infectious Wearables, and they did ties very similar to these plush toys of microbes. My tie is Staphylococcus bacteria, so maybe it's not that weird. Or maybe I'm just that weird. I don't know. Anyway, we go to London. The Sound of Music may have brought joy to audiences for decades, but now hits from the classic musical are being used to shepherd home unimpressed Scottish youths. Staff at the Hilton Community Centre in Inverness were finding it difficult to make juveniles leave the youth club at closing time, so they turned to Julie Andrews' dulcet tones for assistance. It was discovered that short bursts of My Favorite Things and The Hills Are Alive piped through the center's sound system were the most effective method of dispersing the skeptical teenagers. Highland Councillor John Finney said there has been a lot of work that has gone into the facilities at the Hilton Community Center, and they are so very much appreciated by the young folk. They are very keen to hang around and don't want to go home at 10 p.m. So this is a creative use of music, classical music, musicals, and if things get really awkward, I understand nursery rhymes will be deployed. Speaking of the Sound of Music, there is a really cool YouTube video that has a flash mob scene that takes place in a Belgium train station to the tune of Do Re Mi. If you haven't seen it, you've got to check it out. It will put a smile on your face. There's a link to it on my Fun Page page. Or Fun Space page, rather, in Facebook. And I've also put a link in the What's On page for this podcast on my website at www.peteranthonyholder.com. Okay? Up next, more stuff. We're getting closer and closer to Mitch Joel, president of Twist Image and the author of Six Pixels of Separation. We'll do that in a bit. But I have another story that I want to share with you on the stuff. Well, actually, two more. The Utah Highway Patrol has come up with a clever new way to help curb the incidence of drunk driving in their state. They've teamed up with local bars to give folks an idea of what it's like to have to call your parents and tell them that you are in jail for DUI. A phone number has been set up to recreate what it would feel like to make such a call. After dialing the number, which by the way is 1-877-JAIL-PHONE, and phone is F-O-N, the caller is given the option to talk to a hysterical mother or a disapproving father, among others. A pre-recorded message then plays one end of what the conversation might sound like, with the caller filling in the other half. Slogans associated with the campaign include, "Getting a DUI is easy, calling your mom from jail is hard." One more story from the stuff file before we get to Mitch Joel. So you think you've had some bad first dates? Well, it'll be hard to top what one woman from Ferndale, Michigan experienced. Having her car stolen on her first date. The woman's date turned out to be 23-year-old Terrence DeJuan McCoy, who took the woman to dinner at Buffalo Wild Wings restaurant. They had met just a week earlier at a casino in Detroit. Well, after dinner, Terrence told the woman he had left his wallet in her car and asked for her keys. She handed him over the keys, and not only did he skip out on the dinner tab, he sped off in her 2000 Chevrolet Impala. But he did make one fatal error, sending a picture of himself to his date's cell phone. Police quickly identified Terrence from the pic. Apparently, he gets around. He's now been charged with stealing the car, which is a 5-year felony. There's a special place in hell for people like that. Okay, shall we get to our first guest? Yes. Our first guest on our very first podcast is someone who knows quite a bit about podcasting. His name is Mitch Joel, president of Twist Image, the author of Six Pixels of Separation, and the man behind the very popular blog of the same name. He, of course, is a podcaster himself. Thanks for being on the program with us, Mitch. And I have to say right off the bat that people have been saying that I should be doing a podcast, and no one has been saying that more than you. So if people like this program, that's fine. And if they don't, you're the one to blame.
I guess that's the way it goes. I'm fine with that. I think that you had an amazing show for 20 years, and then I say had, and I go, why had? You can continue having an amazing show. That's the power of these new media channels, and I'm happy you're diving in.
Now, you wrote about it on a recent blog or blog piece on your website, and that is Six Pixels of Separation. And I'm just curious to know, who's the person or the group that doesn't get it the most? Are they people like myself who are in the broadcast industry? Are they the audience that has to be educated on this, or the advertisers?
I think it's sort of all of the above and none of the above. We just have a scenario where some people are highly engaged in these online channels, and others are just sort of either sitting on the sidelines or not sure of what they want to do. And so what I try to do with the book, Six Pixels of Separation, is really get them, get these people, get these business people primarily in a media hardcover books that they're most comfortable with, something they're used to, something they constantly use. And my hopes are that it almost acts as a transition or bridge so that they start listening, following more blogs, checking out Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, etc.
Now, you mentioned the book, which, you know, is a hard copy situation. And how fast is this business, is this industry changing? And as a result, not to knock the book or anything, but how soon does it become out of date?
So I finished actually writing the book in November, and we're talking now in September. So it's like almost like a weird year of process. And I guess the biggest thing that I actually have to go back and change is the fact that it's no longer Microsoft Search. It's called Bing now. That was a big one. But, you know, I think, yes, tools, tactics, and channels evolve, change, get introduced. But there's still a fundamental underlying strategy of what these conversations look like and what these platforms look like that really hasn't changed all that much. And in sort of being able to review the book, which obviously I did when it came out and I finally got to hold it in my hands, what I realized is that it was still very timely. It would have been timely had it been written even 3 years ago. I think it'll be timely in 3 to 5 years, too. I don't think it's a quick transition. I think things feel fast, and they are fast, but things are still slow to change, as it were, and that's just the sort of nature of humanity and the nature of all new channels.
So with so many podcasts out there, because just about anybody can do one very easily without even the elaborate setup that I have, is it a situation where people can get lost in a forest?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had a blog post a while back that I called Mass Media or Mass Content, What's Worse? Because, you know, in the mass media world, it was 4 or 5 controlling channels with, you know, not really giving people much choice. And then suddenly you shift to this digital landscape where anybody and everybody is a publisher, which is a great thing, but it's hard to sort of sift through it. I believe that's why there are great platforms like iTunes that provide, you know, to a certain degree, some form of aggregation and editing as well. I think the addition of people being able to rate and add peer reviews is amazingly powerful. And then obviously the ability for an individual to take and blog about what their favorite podcasts are or list their favorite blogs on their own blog, I think adds a level of editing and aggregation that is, A, much needed, but B, more importantly, really helps people sift through, you know, the junk to find the gold.
Is anybody making a living from this? Can someone make a living from this?
There's two sides to it. One is clearly there are people who are making a quote-unquote living from it. Are they making millions from it? Hard to sort of say. The other side of it is that by doing this, by keeping your voice out there, by connecting, by adding value to the community you serve, you actually do become some sort of recognized authority, thought leader, if you will. The truth of the matter is I started my business, Twist Image, or digital marketing agency, in 2002 is when I sort of got here and joined my two business partners and one employee. At the time, you know, no major industry media or even mass media was all that interested in a company that had just started with no real employees and no real clients. And I realized at that point, having previously had a lifetime in publishing and journalism, that I don't need permission. I can use these blogging platforms to communicate. And so we started blogging. And through blogging, we got engaged in podcasting and Twitter. From that, it got the attention of mass media who asked that I write or be quoted in articles. From there, it became a book deal and speaking and stuff like that. And now here I sit in, you know, a couple years later with, you know, 90-plus employees, offices in Montreal and Toronto. We're a multi-million-dollar business. So I believe you can make a lot of money, too. I just don't think it's in, quote-unquote, monetizing the actual podcast or running ads on it. I think it's in using that as leverage to grow your business, to connect to your community, to really push ideas forward.
I think it's interesting. Initially, you mentioned the fact when I said, can someone make a living from this? You said somebody can make a living. Whether they become millionaires or not is another story. It's interesting that people seem to think it's nothing or amazing wealth, and there's no in between.
Yeah, well, I think that part of the reason why I always hesitate on that question is because, you know, we're all getting trapped in the mass media complex of the only way to make money is if you have tons of followers, because if you have tons of followers, then the advertisers will care. But that's traditional advertising, and that's not what we're talking about. My goal on my blog, which, you know, is highly ranked and highly trafficked, really is to reach 5 to 10 chief marketing officers a year. If they should so be inclined to hire my agency because they think what we're saying is really smart on the blog, my audience is like 6 people, right? And so it's just a different mindset. But I think that when I say it in the general sort of public, people's immediate reaction is, you know, how do I put an ad in front of that, like the Super Bowl? And that's not the point. The big thing about the web is that it allows you to connect to who is important to the content you're serving, not how many people. And you do. You find your own little mass in that who.
And going back to the blog piece that you wrote, and which you mentioned my name quite often, it brings me to the question, you know, a lot of people have been saying I should start a podcast of some kind. And of course, that aspect of my starting a podcast is for their satisfaction, which I appreciate. But at the same token, I still have bills to pay.
But I do think that in you continuing the show and you keeping the Peter Anthony Holder brand in the marketplace and growing an audience, what you're actually doing is creating visibility for yourself. And that will help you get other jobs, other work, other opportunities. And so, you know, it's like saying, I want to make money off of my business cards because I keep printing them and handing them out. I mean, it doesn't really add up that way, but it can. You know, people have monetized podcasts. There are people who release, you know, one show a week, but if you want to get them every single day, you pay for the premium. There are people who have it ad supported. And yeah, they make a living. Is it the same as running ABC or Fox News? No, it's a different type of model. But for them, it's a really good livelihood and gives them a lot of freedom. So I always look at it almost like a freelance model, where if you're looking to monetize from an advertising standpoint, you're really looking at, you know, doing several things. I tend to look at my blog. My blog, I think, already has advertising. Me, Twist Image. That's the ad. And it is an ad without really, quote-unquote, selling or pushing services. I don't talk about my agency. I don't talk about the services we provide. I add value to the marketing communications industry by creating content I think will be valuable to them. You know, wrote a book, hopefully they'll buy it and they'll learn and they'll grow their business. And my hope's that by growing their business, my business will grow.
Whose podcast do you listen to?
I listen to a whole bunch, actually. I'm a bit of a podcasting nerd when it comes to that. Mostly they fall in the sort of marketing communications area. So there's Joseph Jaffe's Jaffe Juice. There is Christopher S. Penn and John Wall have a great show called Marketing Over Coffee. My absolute favorite one is these two guys, Shell Holtz and Neville Hobson. Shell lives in Concord, California, and Neville is working in Berkshire in England. And they record through Skype, and they release twice a week, and it's an hour each show. So it's 2 hours a week. It's called For Immediate Release, and it really is all about, you know, the intersection of PR and communications. There's some great ones in Canada. Inside PR is one of them. Terry Follis, David Jones, a great show there. I mean, there's so many. Then from the sort of more, I guess, generic side, I enjoy Adam Carolla has turned to podcasting. I think he's quite interesting and has some cool guests. I like CBC's got a couple. One is called Spark with Nora Young that I enjoy a lot. Like I said, my iPod is quite stacked with the content.
And you mentioned the CBC in the last bit there, and that, of course, is an already existing broadcasting entity. Are more broadcasters, as in the generic entities themselves, going on into the podcast realm?
Yeah, they sure are, because they're realizing that, you know, once Peter Anthony Holder on air says something, it's out in the ether, and that's sort of it. But what they can do is take that packet, that content, and package it out. Whether it's in smaller segments or the entire thing, they can post it on the internet to iTunes. It can be linkable, findable, searchable. That creates, you know, Google juice for them. So when people are looking for CBC, this content sort of rises to the top of the search engines. It's almost like a ongoing repository of content that somebody somewhere might find interesting and valuable. Just yesterday, I had an interview a couple of weeks ago with Steve Wozniak, one of the co-founders of Apple. What he did that with Steve Jobs, a very well-known guy responsible for the first personal computer. And for the younger people, he was on Dancing with the Stars. But it actually didn't come out great. It was a phone conversation. There was a lot of high pitches and buzzing. But again, I used my podcast as a platform to just have it out there in the world. And that's a big thing, too, is we suddenly live in a world where anybody can publish their thoughts to the world, and why shouldn't they?
I thank you very much for being the very first guest on the very first podcast. And as I said in the introduction, if people like this, great. If they don't, you're to blame. That would be Mitch Joel, president of Twist Image and the author of Six Pixels of Separation.
Well, if they don't like it, they can find another podcast. And the people who do like it will find you. And that's the amazing thing about this, Peter.
Thank you very much for being on the program.
Godspeed.
Mitch Joel, president of Twist Image, author of Six Pixels of Separation, and the man behind the very popular blog of the same name. Check out his website at www.twistimage.com. And, of course, check out his podcast. Coming up, more stuff, plus we learn about a video grave marker. I'm Peter Anthony Holder, and this is the Stuff File Podcast. Back in a moment.
Hi, this is Ben Patrick Johnson, voiceover actor, male model, and all-around nice guy, some days. When I'm not voicing blockbuster movie trailers, TV promos, or doing charity work like this, I also write novels. I have four of them out, and I know it's a gift. Anyway, my latest novel is actually my most personal. It's called If the Rains Don't Cleanse, which tells the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo, loosely based on my own parents. Everyone thinks you should read it, including me, of course. You can order it right now. It's just a mouse click away at Amazon.com or Amazon.ca. You'll find links for it, along with several reviews, on the podcast page at www.peteranthonyholder.com. Remember the title, If the Rains Don't Cleanse, by me, Ben Patrick Johnson. Buy a copy because, I got to be frank, doing voiceover liners for Peter Anthony Holder's podcast, it isn't exactly paying the bills. If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Now, more from the Stuff File Podcast with Peter Anthony Holder.
You are indeed listening to the Stuff File Podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And still to come, Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Also, we'll talk to Robert Barrows, the creator of the Video Enhanced Grave Marker. More on that in a moment. And we'll check the mailbag. But we have more stuff right here, right now. We go to Zachary, Louisiana. A Zachary, Louisiana grocery store security cameras caught the whole bizarre thing on tape. 42-year-old Lisa Newsom took a 24-can case of beer from the cooler, wedged the case between her thighs by pulling up her dress, and then pulled her dress back down, and then proceeded to waddle out of the store. When she was later arrested by police, she not only admitted to the crime, she offered to demonstrate how she did it. Captain David McDavid, who names their kid David McDavid? Anyway, Captain David McDavid of the Zachary Police Department said, "I told her, no thanks, I wasn't into that," but Captain McDavid said he was impressed, as the case weighed 20 pounds. You know, there is a really crass dating joke there somewhere, but I'm just going to leave it alone. Speaking of leaving alone, in Findlay, Washington, police arrested a 26-year-old man for harassing his neighbor's horse. Oh, and the guy wasn't wearing any pants at the time. The horse's owner said he saw the suspect chasing the horse around his corral at around 3:30 in the morning. And did we mention the guy wasn't wearing any pants at the time? So the police got our friend some pants and then took him to jail. There you go. Meanwhile, to Salt Lake City for our next story. A Salt Lake City woman who held a Guinness World Record for her long fingernails before they were broken off in a car crash says it was the most dramatic event in her life, but Lee Redman, who lost the fingernails in February, says it's now much easier to do things, and her hands seem to fly with the weight of the nails gone. The 68-year-old woman won't grow her nails out again, saying it took 30 years the first time and she may not live for another 30 years. Redman hasn't cut her nails, or she hadn't anyway before the accident, since 1979, and entered the Guinness World Records book in 2002 for longest fingernails on a woman. The Guinness website says her nails measured a total of more than 28 feet long in 2008, with the longest nail on her right thumb at 2 feet 11 inches. Now, I saw a picture of her online and also in the paper, and to show you where my mind goes, only one thing comes to mind when I think of fingernails that long. First of all, she probably is not a speed typist. Let's go without saying on that one. But how does she use toilet paper? You ever think of that? It kind of crosses my mind. Anyway, while we're talking on the issue of toilets, see, there's always a segue on this program. At the recent Leeds Musical Festival in England, a 19-year-old girl, identified only as Charlotte, accidentally dropped her handbag down one of the portable toilets at the festival. She then made the mistake of trying to retrieve it and got stuck in the tank. It took firefighters 20 minutes to dismantle the porta-potty and pull her free. Now, the incident earned her the nickname Poo Girl. Well, Poo Girl has now become a pop icon of sorts, and the Poo Girl Leeds Fest 2009 Appreciation Society, set up in her honor, has now attracted nearly 14,000 members on Facebook. I tell you, there's a Facebook group for just about everybody. Her cousin, Katie, explained how it all happened and said, "I think most people would have left the bag, but it had all of her money in it, her phone, and her tickets home. Her life, really. She couldn't reach with one arm, so she put her other arm in and managed to get her shoulders stuck. Her arms are black and blue from bruises." Oh yeah, it's just the bruises. "As for Charlotte, or Poo Girl, she says, 'I can't believe how big this story has become. You can even buy Poo Girl sweatshirts online now.'" Wow, there's something for everybody. Speaking of which, something for everybody. There's an entrepreneur in Burlingame, California, who is hoping to knock 'em dead with his invention. Literally. Robert Barrows is the creator of the Video Enhanced Grave Marker, a video screen that can be embedded into graveyard headstones, turning tombstones into makeshift movie theaters. Now, Robert is on the line with us right now, and right off the bat, Robert, I gotta ask the simple question, and that is, how did you come up with this idea?
Well, you know, it's a couple of different ways. One, I'm a sculptor, and I work in stone. And when you start carving a rectangular piece of stone, you can't help but thinking that you're carving your own tombstone. And I also run an ad agency, so I do television commercials all the time. And you put the two together, you've got a video tombstone.
Gotcha, gotcha. So you came up with this idea of the video-enhanced grave marker. So how exactly does this work? I would assume at some point the soon-to-be departed would have to record something. Is that how it works?
Yeah. Basically, I'll give you an idea how the tombstone itself works. It works basically like your home video equipment. And actually, rather than embedding the video equipment into the tombstone, I've actually made a hollowed-out chamber in the tombstone. So you insert weatherproofed video equipment in there. And then it works just like your home video equipment works. With a remote control, you can walk into a graveyard and click on a video tombstone and listen to anything anybody wanted to say about themselves before they died. And what you would basically do is you would record your video and give it to your attorney and give your attorney the instructions to insert it immediately upon the erection of the tombstone or 5 years after you die or whenever you want to put that in there. And you'd also leave instructions. In other words, if you yourself didn't record the video, you might leave instructions for your survivors who may record what and what kind of content they could put into that tombstone.
Is there a time limit? Do people have short messages, long messages, what?
No, it works like any home video equipment can. You can put hours of equipment, hours of recordings in there. You could also put a multiple disc machine in there so that you could have numerous hours of recording.
Are people actually doing this now? Is this available for people, or is this something you're just starting?
This has been, there have been a couple of inventions prior to mine, which received patents that are similar to it. So the idea has been out there for several years. There is another company that is currently using a small video playback device, which can be embedded into a tombstone, which will only give you about 5 to 7 minutes of a video, almost like a slideshow as opposed to real moving video presentation. And there are several tombstones which have been able to deliver audio content. But this is basically an advancement on those because it'll be able to deliver hours of video content in smooth transmission and high quality. But basically, in terms of what I would say in my own tombstone while I was filing the patent back in 2002, which it was ready in October, so I told my attorney, why don't you file it on Halloween, just because of the nature of the device. I figured, okay, what would I say for my own tombstone? And I started writing a novel called Cemetery of Lies, and in that you basically go from tombstone to tombstone and hear different stories from each grave, and the real question is it truth or is it lies, and what does it all mean?
Do you anticipate people are going to take this seriously? And by what I mean is, do you anticipate people are going to have really somber messages, or do you think people will have fun with this?
I think it will change the way you look at life and death. When you start recording messages, when you're basically writing your own obituary, all of a sudden you might say things that you never had the chance to say while you were alive, or you never had the guts to say while you were alive, or it may be time to make amends, or you may decide to tell jokes and sing songs to your loved ones and future generations. And it'll also change the way that history is told, because now you can go to one of the reasons why I came up with this thing. When I was thinking about video tombstones, Wyatt Earp is buried in a cemetery not too far from where I am, just south of San Francisco. And I was watching the video tombstone, and at the end of the video tombstone, in the credits, they explain that this particular movie was based on the book My Friend Wyatt Earp by Doc Holliday. So I went to the library trying to find this book, and they didn't have that book, but they had several hundred books on Wyatt Earp, none of them written by Holliday nor Earp. But at the end of the card catalog, I see a listing for the video tombstone. Aha, video tombstone. So I think people will basically say all kinds of things in these video tombstones, and that'll do something rather interesting, because it'll create some tremendous free speech issues. How can you control what somebody says from the grave? What if it's libelous or slanderous? What if they say something true or untrue about you? What can you do? How can you pull the plug? And whom can you sue? And worse yet, how can you collect? Hmm. So it'll raise some interesting free speech issues.
What will it cost for someone to have this?
It's possible that this might cost about $15,000 to $20,000 U.S. Basically, it'll depend on the size and shape of the tombstone to begin with, and the electronics. I recently got some estimates on some weatherproof televisions, and a good weatherproof television itself runs about $2,500, and the transmitting equipment to deliver the audio will run probably a couple of thousand more. So maybe $15,000 to $20,000 bucks might be the cost of these things.
So, again, walk me through this. You know, dear old Gramps departs from this this earth, and he's in the ground, and I go to visit him now. Do I have the remote control, or is it activated by sensors, or what? How does this work?
You would basically get or rent a remote control device from the cemetery office. You would also get or rent a set of headphones, because audio can be delivered two ways. Audio can be delivered by speakers that are attached to the tombstone, but it'd be a little bit more appropriate for the audio to be transmitted to wireless headsets, because audio at a tombstone may disrupt a funeral that might be going on at the tombstone right next to that particular tombstone. Now, the remote control itself can be encoded so that only people with the code numbers can listen to what you have to say, or it can be left open for the world to hear what you have to say.
And I guess that would be left up to the deceased to decide before he or she goes whether they want their statement heard by everyone?
Yeah, pretty much. And then basically, I guess there's no business like show business even after you're dead.
Let's say, for argument's sake, I decide that I want to share with my family after I'm gone an ongoing saga. That I decide that I have many chapters that will only be time-released upon subsequent visits from my loved ones, you know, to keep them coming back, as the saying goes, keep them coming for more.
Well, that certainly could be done, and you could say insert, chapters 1 through 5, 5 years after I'm dead, 6 through 10, 6 years after I'm dead, through etc. Plus, the device also can be equipped with a camera and microphones so that visitors to the grave can record messages for future visitors to the grave through many generations.
It's also an interesting way, especially if you, as you say, for many generations, one thing you don't necessarily have are, I've never met a grandfather. Both of them were long dead before I was born. I'm sure there are many people who will, in the future, have that similar situation. They'll be able to see ancestors they've never met.
Yes, and also when you go to a cemetery and you look at all the hundreds or thousands of graves around you, and you realize that each of these people had a story to tell, it'll make cemeteries a fascinating place to visit. And when you go from tombstone to tombstone, hearing different stories from each one, you'll find in a small community or even a large community that lives may have been intertwined in ways you may never even have thought before. And you might find out that your girlfriend was going out with someone you didn't think she was going out with.
Interesting concept indeed. People can go to your website, I believe, to find more information, which is www.barrows.com. That's BARROWS.com, correct?
Yes, and they can... if they kind of go a couple pages deep into it, they'll see a page with a lot of the social implications of these devices, because not only will it create free speech issues, it'll cause changes in estate law. It'll also create a whole new genre of storytelling with literary, film, and television projects similar to the book that I wrote. Mostly, coming out because it's just a terrific storytelling device for anything from a love story to a horror movie to a historical piece. And it'll really change a lot of things that we didn't expect to change.
Robert Barrows, the creator of the video-enhanced grave marker, and you can check out the website at www.barrows.com. You can also find the links on my website on the What's On page for this week's show at www.peteranthonyholder.com. Thanks for being on with us, Robert.
Thank you, Pete.
Okay, still to come, Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. But right now, I think we have to check the mail. I think we have incoming.
Incoming subspace signal.
Yes, we've received a lot of email over the last little while, as I mentioned earlier, from people who were talking about the demise of the show that I did. And I want to say once again how grateful I am for all the messages that I got. And thank you very, very much. So I thought I'd share some emails with you. that I've received over the last little while. One from Janice, a longtime listener to the show. Hope you find something soon. Thank you very much, Janice. So do I. You always seem to have fun talking to celebrities. Do you have a favorite? Of the celebrities I've talked to over the last, 20 years on the program, probably one of my favorites would have to be Cloris Leachman. She's very irreverent and freewheeling, a woman who has a great sense of humor. I'm sure you got the feeling of that when you watched her on Dancing with the Stars just a little while ago. Now, we interviewed her several years ago, long before Dancing with the Stars, and I got to set this up a little bit, because I'm actually going to play a little clip for you. She was on the program with us on a night when I had a very, very bad cold. Now, she's living in California, so we were talking to her over the telephone. And I'm in the studio, of course, and therefore, thankfully, not in the same room with her, I could turn my microphone off and on while she was talking, and there's a reason why I bring that up. She was so funny through the entire time we had her on the show. We had her on for an hour, and she was just cracking me up, and I couldn't stop laughing. And of course, with a very bad cold, when you're laughing, you're coughing. So I was literally coughing up a lung talking to her, and I swear to God, by the time the hour was over, my cold had broken completely. I mean, it just like, I was all phlegmed out. It was clear after I had Cloris Leachman on the program. So she could probably bottle that somehow and do it. In any case, I kept turning my microphone off because I was coughing so hard and laughing so hard. Now, the clip we're going to play for you, I was asking her the question, how many Emmy Awards did she have? And she was answering that question, and that's what led to my laughter. So here is that clip, starting with her answer about how many Emmy Awards she has.
Well, I guess I have a record 8.
Wow.
8 Emmys. And I tied when I had 6 Emmys. 5 of them were for different roles, and I was tied with Sir Laurence Olivier for the same amount. But he was kind enough to die so that he wouldn't, be winning all the time. Thoughtful enough. Poor dear man. And I went on, now I have 8. Mary Tyler Moore was, it was so funny. She said, you have 8 Emmys? I said, yeah. She said, I thought you had 7. I said, no, I have 8. You have 8 Emmys? Yeah. She said, well, I thought I had the most. I said, I don't know. I have 8. It was a lovely moment for me, I must say. Very exciting.
I'm just getting over that Laurence Olivier line.
I know it. Isn't that funny?
That's the Irreverent Cloris Leachman. And by the way, since she was on the show with us, she's won another Emmy. So she has 8 primetime Emmys, 1 daytime Emmy, and of course, let's not forget, she is an Academy Award-winning actress. She won Best Supporting Actress for Last Picture Show. So she knows her stuff. So that's the question that Janice asked. Hope that answers the question for you.
Incoming subspace signal.
Here's another email, this one from Will. Always enjoyed the show. I used to listen to it via the internet from Singapore. We used to have a lot of listeners, by the way, on the radio show from all over the world who listened online. That's always a cool thing. Hopefully those people will still continue to listen to the podcast. And now they can listen to it anytime they want. Anyway, I always enjoyed the musical snippets you played. Did you pick your own music, and what was your opening and closing theme music? Okay, the opening theme was, and is, by the way, I'm using it here on the podcast. I don't know how long we'll continue using the music that we were using before. We'll see how that pans out, works out. But the opening theme music is and was Soulful Strut by Grover Washington Jr. When we started the show back 20 years ago, we actually used the original Soulful Strut, which was done by Young Holt Unlimited. And then Grover Washington recorded not one, but 2 different versions. And over the years, we have used both versions. We're using the third version that Grover Washington did. So that's the answer to that question, Soulful Strut. And the closing theme song was Stink, or Is Stink, by John Lurie. And that's from the Get Shorty soundtrack. And yes, the snippets, or as we call them in the biz, liners, or liner music, was all selected by myself and edited by me. So that answers that question. As I said, for the time being, we'll keep them all. And we'll see how it works out. And by the way, for the podcast, whenever I play any kind of music, I will list it on my website at peteranthonyholder.com so people can find out that information if they are so inclined. Do we have time for one more incoming?
Incoming subspace signal.
Ah, yes. As I mentioned, I got a lot of email from people complaining about the fact that the show is no longer on the radio. And some people who wrote to me, actually most people who wrote to me, didn't have too many kind things to say about my former employer, but I'm not going into that. So I'm going to just paraphrase this particular email, which is written by a fellow by the name of Michelle. You were by far the reason I actually stayed up late and made me discover a whole collection of strange and zany personalities. It was obvious by the number of times I heard your guests compliment you on the quality of your questions that you were a very professional interviewer with a very quick wit. Where else would I have gotten a chance to talk to Peter Marshall, he was the host of the Hollywood Squares, or Harrison Schmitt? Harrison Schmitt was the last man to walk on the moon. My New Year's Eve will not be the same. We did a New Year's Eve show every year. Did it for, 20 years, basically. I'm sure you'll find an interesting job somewhere, but the only positive thing about your show's demise is I might get more sleep, given that depending on the subject and how tired I was, I would usually drift in and out over the whole 3 hours, making it a point to always listen to the Stuff File and Steve Walsh. Well, you can hear the Stuff File here, Michelle. And we'll do it on this program, not in the same way we did it on the radio show, all in one clump. We'll put it as we've done so far tonight on this program. I keep saying tonight because I still have a nighttime kind of mind, but we'll do the Stuff File all through the show, along with some of the interviews that we'll do. And yes, we will have Steve Walsh on the program. Which brings me to the fact that you are indeed listening to the Stuff File podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder, and it is indeed time for Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Cue the intro.
Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters, and in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve-a-rino?
I'm feeling fine in a new place, but feeling great.
Yes.
The opening is different.
Well, slightly different.
We
had to remove some call letters.
Yeah, call letters. Well, I forget what those are. I haven't worked for call letters for a long time.
That's true. You work in a network yourself, so you don't work at a radio station, as the saying goes.
Exactly.
And for those who aren't familiar, we should mention who you are, Steve Walsh. You work at MissouriNet.
That's right.
Which is how many radio stations?
About 65.
All over the state of Missouri.
All over the great state of Missouri, the show-me state, as we like to call it.
And you also write the blog?
The MissouriNet blog, filled with fun and frivolity every now and then, and occasionally some serious stuff.
Excellent. And speaking of fun and frivolity, what do we have this week?
Okay, here we go. Ready?
Yep.
Dateline, Sedalia, Missouri.
Ah, that would be the show me state. By the way, that had a nice sound for our inaugural podcast. I like that.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes, yes.
I like that. It's inaugural. Wow, I'm part of the first. I'm one of the first. Wow.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, here we go. Okay. In Sedalia, Missouri, we have these T-shirts. You see, during the state fair, which wrapped up a little while ago, these T-shirts promoting the Smith Cotton High School Band's fall program, well, they were recalled, and they were banned. Why? Because the shirts display the theme of evolution. The light gray shirts featured an image of a monkey progressing through various stages of evolution until eventually becoming a human being. Each figure held this brass instrument that also evolved, illustrating the theme brass evolutions. But the assistant superintendent of school said a group of parents complained to him after the band marched at the state fair parade because they apparently think evolution is now a religious belief and say the school district is required by law to remain neutral on religion. So there, monkey see, monkey don't necessarily do.
When did this world go nuts with political correctness?
I think it was probably in the last 20 years.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I think after we got into the business. Okay.
Dateline, Madison, Wisconsin.
That'd be the Badger State.
or as we like to call it,
the Cheese State.
Where the motto is,
if it's cheddar,
it's better. The Madison City Council has voted to designate the plastic pink flamingo, its official bird, hard to believe, I know, honoring a college prank committed 30 years ago. Back in 1979, University of Wisconsin students planted about 1,000 of these pink plastic birds on a grassy incline outside the dean's office. Alderman Marsha Rummel told the Wisconsin State Journal the council's 15-4 vote ensured the event was captured in our imaginations forever.
Wow.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Yeah. 1979. That's the year I got into the business.
You're getting old.
I know.
Dateline, Chicago, Illinois.
Land of Lincoln.
Yes, yes. I never lived there.
Not yet.
No. Chicago banker George Michael, no, not that George Michael, seeking to avoid $80,000 a year in property taxes, decided to call his $3 million mansion a church and apply for tax exemption as pastor, and in July of last year, his application was somehow preliminarily approved by the Illinois Department of Revenue. According to a report in the Chicago Tribune, the application included a photograph of the church, which was just a shot of an outer wall of Michael's house with a large cross on it, except that the cross was later discovered to have been merely placed on the photograph in marker pen. In July of this year, a state administrative law judge finally reversed the earlier approval.
It's amazing what you can do with a Sharpie.
Yeah, I know. It really is.
Yeah.
It's amazing that somebody was stupid enough to buy it. Dateline, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
That'd be the Gopher State.
Or Land of 10,000 Lakes, if you'd like.
Yes.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, you just got to feed a gorilla a Pop-Tart. An unnamed police officer in Minneapolis is being investigated for his bad habit of breaking into the Como Zoo so he can feed Pop-Tarts to the gorillas. Three gorillas, Schroeder, Gordy, and Togo, were all fed the Kellogg's breakfast food. Security guards spotted the officer on surveillance cameras. The zoo says the animals haven't suffered any ill effects from the experience, but have never eaten the sugary treat before. It was the first time. I'd hate to go digging through their leftovers. Let's stay in that state, okay? Dateline, Mankato, Minnesota.
Still a Gopher State.
Still 10,000 lakes.
Yep.
Or more. You know, it didn't take much work for two county sheriff's deputies in Minnesota to track down four burglary suspects. In fact, the suspects pulled right into the Happy Chef restaurant where the Blue Earth County deputies were on a coffee break. The deputies had been investigating three residential burglaries that seemed to be related when they were on their break at Happy Chef. A report of another burglary came in from another county along with a description of the suspect's pickup truck. A truck matching that description pulled right into the parking lot. The stolen goods, including laptop, computers, other electronics, jewelry, they were all in the back. See what happens when you stop to eat? Provided you don't take too much time.
Exactly. Sometimes the crime just comes right to you.
You know, thinking of time and eating and snacking, it's made me want to take keyboard in hand, Peter.
Uh-huh.
And do a two-minute tirade.
Ah, yes.
Tonight I want to talk about the break room that exists in most companies. Have you ever noticed when you're in a hurry and head to the break room to quickly grab a cup of coffee, you invariably run into a group of people, usually members of the feminine persuasion, talking about who's getting married and who's pregnant and who just gave birth, that kind of stuff? The break room is small as it is, and three or four people gathered together to chat makes it almost impossible for anyone to grab a cup of coffee or to pop some food in the microwave. Be like the smokers. Go outside to chat about your weddings, your babies, your pregnancies, and the rest of them. And as if the chattering class isn't enough, we then have the company fuddy-duddy who feels the need to make a performance out of coffee preparation. Does your company have one of these? Ours does. Well, most of us run into the break room, pour a cup of coffee for ourselves, and then toss in a packet of whitener or a packet of sugar and whatever. We head back to work. But we have this one guy who takes not one, not two, but 3 minutes to prepare a cup of Java. What's the deal here? Why must we have performance art? It's a cup of coffee, for the love of Pete. I realize that this is not a problem in most companies. In fact, some companies don't even have break rooms. But for those that do, it's time we rose in unison and said no to the chattering class and the coffee performance artists. It's time to insist that coffee be poured as quickly as possible and taken out of the break room as quickly as possible, and to do your chatting where I do mine, at my desk.
Ooh. Not enough coffee this morning, Steve?
Apparently not.
Wow. Where can people find the blog and also the website and all that fun stuff that you do?
I think people should go to MissouriNet.com, MissouriNet.com. You'll see some stories I've written, and then go over to the right-hand column, go down, you'll see the MissouriNet blog. That's me. My little picture's there.
Excellent.
Going to have fun.
Fun to have you back on the program with us, sir.
Great to be back. Hope everything works out well. Glad to be on the maiden voyage.
Excellent. And we always end off by you saying those three magic words.
Hit the theme!
This is the Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this week's edition, the inaugural edition of the Stuff File podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We have enough time for a couple of more Stuff File stories and the idiot of the day. So let's get right to it. David Shaler, age 43, used to be a British MI5 intelligence officer, but apparently went downhill after a controversy with superiors, and today lives as Dolores Kent in full female dress and believes in his, her, its heart that he is the Messiah who will save mankind from its upcoming 2012 doomsday by turning billions of people onto the virtues of hemp, which is perfectly balanced, full of omega minus 3, minus 6, and minus 9, and will help muscles grow and repair. Shaler, or Kent, or whatever he or she is calling himself, also believes that Americans staged September 11th and that Jesus Christ was, like him, a transvestite. So, there you go. Elsewhere, according to prosecutors in Britain's Preston Crown Court in July, Christopher Monks, age 24, wanted two things based on transcribed internet chat room dialogue. He wanted his parents killed, and he wanted his penis bitten off. As the internet is fertile ground for communities of sexual aberrance, Monks easily found a man, Sean Scairns, age 19, who was searching to accommodate someone on the latter desire and who allegedly agreed to kill Monk's parents in exchange. However, Scairns botched the killings, and Monk's himself is still intact. Wow. That's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard, but that is still not the idiot of the day. Let's get to the idiot of the day right now.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
And to wrap things up with our idiot of the day, authorities in eastern Pennsylvania say they have identified a suspected bank robber using the wallet he left behind. Bethlehem police said 51-year-old Lloyd Virgil Barkley held up a KNBT branch, making off with $800. But Barkley forgot his wallet, which police say he placed on the teller's counter when he presented a note demanding money. The wallet had two photo IDs, a social security card, and a Philadelphia criminal registration card. Police say the ID pictures match Barkley's image in surveillance footage. Barkley, of Philadelphia, has been charged with robbery and other offenses. Why would someone go into a bank, complete a robbery, and leave their wallet? Only one reason. Because they're an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for the inaugural edition of the Stuff File podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you'll come back for more. Hope I'll have the opportunity to do more. The website is peteranthonyholder.com, where you'll find information and links on our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding date and podcast number. In this case, the podcast number is 0001. Email me at peter@peteranthonyholder.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter. The Twitter address is twitter.com/PAHolder. The Facebook address is facebook.com/PAHolder. Or on Facebook, you can just type in Peter Anthony Holder and you will find the page. Love to hear from you, as I said, and thanks to all who sent emails and notes in the last couple of weeks since the demise of the old radio show. It's much appreciated. See you on the backside with another podcast. Until then, bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File podcast with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Void where prohibited, offer slightly different in Canada. For a complete transcript of this program, next time write down everything Peter says.